Hello, friends. Hi, and I tried to do one of these yesterday for us, program 14, but found that I could not. I had some serious malfunctions in the computer, but now we're more or less back to normal. We finished with program 13. Of Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Section 1, Part 3, Video Commentary. Now we're moving on to Program 14, and today is the 25th. Yesterday was the full moon in Leo, Sirius full moon, an important event every year when the entirety of the hierarchy is recognized, including the new members, by Sanat Kumara. Now, DK is giving us some of the glamours. And if you really want to find lists of glamours, go to Glamour World Problem. About, let's see what I can find here. Glamour World Problem, and around page 120. Here we see it, I think. It starts, yeah. The end of page 120. Look at all those ray glamours. 1, 2, 3, 4, and so forth. Now, the ones that he's going to list at this point are not really quite the same. They are more general, perhaps. And there are hints about, in the bigger list in Glamour World Problem, there are ray glamours, and here we have some hints as to what may be ray glamours. Okay, so let's begin. So here are the names. The Glamour of Destiny. This is a glamour which indicates to the one whom it controls that he has important work to do, and that he must speak and work as destined by whatever power that is compelling him, let me say, going on. This feeds a pride which has no foundation. In fact, we could say that this is largely a ray one glamour, but I think it can be applied to a number of ray tendencies. Maybe the whole idea of monadic destiny is behind all this, and there is a kind of monadic destiny, but the personality seizes on the idea that something important is to be done. And this impression is maybe forced on other people who are companions or who are surrounding the person who has the glamour of destiny. Maybe some of us have fallen into this from time time to time. Important work. Now that of course exalts the lower ego to a certain extent, doesn't it? And we might say, my work is more important than your work, that kind of thing, when we are comparing our impulses towards important work with what we register as the value of the work of others. All right. What about this one? The glamour of aspiration. Right away, you think that it has kind of a sixth-ray flavor to it, as it is most often the astral body which is aspiring. And yet in Taurus, we find what is called the highest form of aspirational idealism. So the mind is not eliminated from this glamour of aspiration. It's possible to have not only an aspiring astral body, but an aspiring mind, reaching towards some higher state than normal desires normally indicate. The glamour of aspiration. Those thus conditioned, says the Tibetan, are completely satisfied and preoccupied with their aspiration towards the light and rest back upon the fact that they are aspirants. Might we say they are settling for less? And there is a veil among the four veils found on the etheric level, which is called the veil of aspiration. It's the final veil after impulsion, distortion, separation, and then this veil of aspiration, which I suppose makes people quite satisfied whether or not they accomplish the goals of their aspiration as long as they aspire. The Tibetan goes on, such people need to move onward onto the path of discipleship. May I say they are probably on the path of probationary discipleship, or we can call it also the path of aspiration. But they need truly, says the Tibetan here, to move onward onto the path of discipleship and cease their preoccupation and satisfaction with their spiritual ambitions and goals. So might we say it's very personality-centered, because the minute you have the word ambition, it points to the personality. In the Master Hilarion's Light on the Path, he tells us something like, be not ambitious, but work as one who is ambitious. So there are certain concentrated tendencies among the ambitious which would be useful to the disciple who has a more laissez-faire attitude. So basically what we have here is the possibility of non-accomplishment, basically, because we rest back on the fact that we have these visions, we have these goals, and we don't take the necessary steps to make sure that achievement follows. Now, what about this one? The glamour of self-assurance, or of what might be called the astral principles of the disciple. Well, may we say that we have a lot of people who are deadly sure that their convictions are correct. We find them in some of the world religions, and we find them among esoteric fundamentalists. It's an indication of fundamentalism and the holding on to that which is indicated by the mind and keenly desired by the astral body, and no room is given to investigate other possibilities. We go on with the Tibetan, this is the belief, in plain language, that the disciple regards that his point of view is entirely right. Well, again, we don't have to search too far, do we, to find people that have that point of view, and maybe some of us have had it at times. I certainly know that I can fall victim of that, because the Tibetan's teaching is so convincing to me that I just feel that in propagating it, I'm quite entirely right. But going on, this again feeds pride. Now, may we say that pride goes before a fall, and pride is always a limitation because it indicates self-satisfaction with a state that exists at the moment, and a kind of false glorification of the present state of the personality, not the real glorification of the transfiguration. This again feeds pride and tends to make the disciple believe himself to be an authority and infallible. May I say, I once had a conversation with a fellow long ago in Oakland or San Francisco, and he had built up an attitude of authority and infallibility, and he really could not answer or indicate a satisfactory solution to some points in the books which I drew to his attention. Though he struggled hard and did not want to relinquish his authoritative, infallible attitude, even though the answers were, at least in my view, unsatisfactory. I guess I was being the one who didn't know, or was pointing out that, look, we have an issue here, and it expands the teaching in a certain way. What do you think? But he went right back to the conventional interpretations of the teachings, and, you know, could not take in the expanded possibility that that instance comes to my mind, and maybe other instances come to you. Going on with DK, it is the background of the theologian who is, may we say, so convinced of the power of his reasoning, fallible though it is on the human level, that he just knows it's correct, basing his conclusion on what he considers to be the infallibility of logic and reason. I mean, I think John Calvin arrived at such a state, which the Tibetan later called the damnable doctrine of predestination. Let's say the gist of it was that God had already determined who would be saved and who would not, and there was nothing you could do about it, namely because God was omniscient and foresaw all possible things that anyone could do, and therefore that pall of damnation hung over certain people, whatever they tried to do. Not only that, but if you were rich, it proved that God loved you. Okay, well, John Calvin had the moon in Taurus and also the sun in Cancer. Taken together, you know, there is a financial emphasis. Okay, what other glamours here? The glamour of duty. And overdoing it, I suppose. Immediately it comes to mind that DK said to his disciple CDP, a very fine woman with the sun in Aries and ascendant in Cancer, and I think the moon in Scorpio, you just don't need to be running around taking care, so you think, of your grown-up children. She just wouldn't release them, and she was always having anxiety and worry about them, and the suspicion, maybe born of Scorpio, that something was always wrong. Well, just read her instructions, and if you really want an exhaustive treatment of this particular disciple, you'll read what Elena Tramcini, a very fine and exacting astrologer, has made of those instructions from a precise astrological point of view. The glamour of duty. Okay. DK goes on, this leads to an overemphasis of the sense of responsibility. Well, let me say, if I'm too responsible for you, I rob you of the opportunity to be responsible for yourself. It's a bit like Master Moria saying, to give all is to put on chains. And there we would be, hovering over the object of our responsibility, supposed responsibility, and giving no room to the individual to grow up and handle life as he or she could or should. Now, what is the result here? DK goes on, producing lost motion. And the emphasis of the non-essential. Well, let's say if you're involved with fulfilling all manner of supposed duties, you are inevitably dealing with some rather irrelevant things, non-essential things. The Tibetan doesn't look in on us so very often. Somewhere it tells that some of the hierarchical members who foresee some promise in an up-and-coming chela may look in every few hundred years or something like that, not wasting motion with every little thing. And that reminds me also of this glamour of circumstance, which was the glamour of a disciple with a Ray 1 soul, Ray 5 personality, Ray 5 mind, Ray 6 astral body, and Ray 7 physical body. I think his name was Charles Hill, and pretty clear to me that he was a second Ray monad with a first Ray soul. I mean, look, he may have been an entomologist studying insects. How many of those do you know? But he played the violin, and he had other softening features. But he was plagued by the tiny little things of life that wasted a lot of his energy. So if a duty is not really there, and you just imagine it, you may be emphasizing your own sense of importance by fulfilling or attempting to fulfill that supposed duty. And you may be tying yourself to someone in a manner which enslaves that someone and enslaves yourself, all unnecessarily. Sometimes with these glamours, you just look at people's behavior and you say to yourself, or maybe to them, do you really need to be doing that? I mean, it really doesn't help. Why do you continue? I mean, you may have then spotted a glamour. Not that we have to have the glamour of going around reminding everybody else of their glamours. It's difficult enough to see our own, but think about how people have called out certain of our behaviors repeatedly. Maybe they've spotted something which we have overlooked or chosen to overlook, or said, oh, that's just the way I am. When people say that, oh, it's just the way I am, something's hiding there, and a certain resistance will be found against changing probably a glamorous or illusory behavior. Okay, the glamour of duty. You know, look at people carefully and just see what you see. Not that we want to sit in judgment, but life is a school, and it's really easy to see the imperfections, or at least some of them, in another person. And yet in the Bible, we're told, you know, why do you trouble yourself with the mote in another person's eye when you have a beam in your own? Meaning there's a lot more wrong with you than with the slight deviation from perfection, which one often prides oneself on noticing in others. All of this is about psychology, and in the United States, under the guidance of the second ray, and I think at this time, this master Apollodorus, I say Apollodorus Issyrenius, the so-called Master P, a lot of advancements in psychological regeneration will be occurring. And it's really necessary, because we may look at people as being, oh, well, this is just your average Joe or Jane, but they are masking or paying little attention to a number of destructive psychopathologies which ruin their spiritual life through, yes, through faulty psychology. What else? The glamour of the mind and its efficiency and its capacity to deal with any or every problem. I knew a guy back in college days, which, well, what can I say? He was a know-it-all, and he kind of, obviously third-rate type, and he kind of held court of the people around him who wanted to know what he knew, or they would submit problems to him or questions, and he would answer them in an authoritative way. Maybe he was not so efficient on the physical plane, but he certainly thought he had a handle on just about anything you could think about, accepting it, dismissing it, making a final pronouncement of it. If the seventh ray had been combined with the third, he probably would have been very efficacious on the physical plane as well. And there are some seventh ray people that are very capable, or maybe they have a seventh ray brain, very capable of handling every little thing on the physical plane and handling it rapidly and well, to the point where they think the way they handle it is the only way to go. It gets humorous, you know. What is said that to the man of feeling, life is a tragedy. To the man of thought, life is a comedy. So that comedy attitude means we have a certain objective distance from what's going on. Humor is a great diffuser of glamour. You know, it allows us to loosen our attachments. So what about this glamour of the mind and of its efficiency, Ray 3, Ray 7, somewhat maybe some Ray 5? You know, we have different ray charts, and it's not all monochromatic, is it? We have representatives or representations of different ray tendencies. So maybe you see yourself in one of these, and certainly if you go to page 120 in Glamour World Problem, you're going to find something that really reflects who you are, including maybe the greatest glamour of all, the glamour of fear. We could say it's a second-ray glamour, and a lot of second-ray people are subject to it, but at the same time, it is pervasive. Anyway, about this glamour of the mind, this leads inevitably to isolation and to loneliness. Why? Because the factors of love and relationship are missing, and there are different types of motion. And when we're dealing with third ray motion, people are in their own whirl, in your own world, in your own whirl. It's this rotary motion that DK says somewhere in White Magic, it's like a flywheel. As you approach, it spins you off. It doesn't invite you in. You become isolated in the assurance that what you think is correct and how you can handle things or choose to handle things is the right way to deal with every problem. Some of us esoterically inclined people would approach such a person, and we would be reminded that what we believe is a bunch of nonsense. Or if such a person is in the teaching, we would be reminded that our interpretation of the teaching is not worth much compared to his or her interpretation. Now keep your eyes open, because you will meet people like this, and maybe in those periods of self-recrimination, DK talks about it as if he knows about it. In those periods of self-recrimination, you will recognize that you have been this way, even if now you are not as fully victimized by this glamour. Then something we're all familiar with, the glamour of devotion. May I add, against which the master has to be protected by members of his ashram. I've seen it. I've seen that devotion, when overdone, sort of ties the hands and feet of the one to whom you are devoted, and especially to the teacher. It's pretty much a sixth ray clamor. It leads to, what does he say, an undue stimulation of the astral body. Have you ever had, may I ask, a fervid astral body? I know I have. I don't pretend that I have a second ray astral body. And I remember a time when my kids were in Boy Scouts or Cub Scouts or something like that, when I was really getting worked up with some kind of zeal. And a guy that was working with me said wisely, well, let's not get too militaristic about this. You know, being Aries type and Mars being important, I recognized and recognize now he had a point. It was a kind of a devotion to a path of accomplishment or something of that nature. So D.K. goes on, the man or woman thus glamored sees only one idea, one person. May I add, you know, so often in the West, it's Jesus, in whom one must believe or not be saved. One person, or maybe it's Mohammed, maybe it's the Buddha, maybe some outstanding teacher, but only one. One authority and one aspect of truth. And it strikes me that by this repetition of the word one, we might find the sixth ray linked to the first ray, ray number one. And what does it do? It feeds fanaticism and spiritual pride. And Master D.K. says, we do not, something like this, we do not desire as our companions, unintelligent fanatics. I mean, that maybe lack of intelligence and fanaticism go hand in hand. I suppose it would be even worse to have an intelligent fanatic, but of course the intelligence would be severely limited. It wouldn't be a general understanding. It wouldn't be an inclusive understanding. Although I do remember Mary Bailey talking, was it to me or to a number of us, about the over-inclusiveness of the sixth ray. You know, making an overemphasized approach, the ray of undue emphasis, that's what the sixth ray is sometimes called. To be inclusive, well, the sixth ray type discovers that he or she has been narrow and immediately will jump into the sixth ray version of inclusiveness. So one is just as fanatical as the other. And there's a special kind of fervidness, I guess I would have to say, that can accompany these devoted attitudes. Otherwise, the master would not have to have some of the senior members of his ashram help to ward off these waves of devotion. So if you find yourself being non-inclusive, and let's say in the matter of world teachers, well, I was in Nepal and I met a Buddhist monk who could speak a little English. I was hopeless with Nepalese or whatever, and he was really railing against Jesus. It just, you know, there was no room in his mind, only the Buddha. And Jesus was, what? Not worthy of consideration. And then a friend of mine told me about riding in a car with a young woman who was of the convinced Christian, and she said with fanatically and with a sense of her own justification, I curse the Buddha. Well, what is this? Just nonsense, you know? pretty soon there's no room for Confucius, and there's no room for Lao Tse, and there's no room for Muhammad. There's just no room for other world teachers who have come along, and as DK kind of informs us in the book, The Reappearance of the Christ, who have contributed a lot to the steps that humanity has needed to take, more steps and more teachers than we can normally be aware of. What are we going to do with the the great astrologer of Atlantis 4 million years ago? Asura Maya was maybe his name. Asura Maya. Anyway, he wrote a book that's part of the Secret Doctrine series of source books called the Surya. Asura, see? Asura Siddhanta. I'm not sure what the last word means, but Surya is always illumination from the sun. So let's not narrow ourselves down too much. Otherwise, we will find ourselves lacking in general understanding, and many pieces of the puzzle will be missing because we have rejected them in the search for only the one. I mean, if we accept what Master DK says as valuable, does that mean we have to reject Master Maurya and his Agni Yoga, or Master Kuthumi, for whom DK has a profound reverence, or any of the other masters? No, we don't reject them just because we get perfervid about one teacher. So let's watch ourselves. That's the big thing about glamour. Keep an eye on yourself, or on your little self. Well, how can you keep an eye on your little self and take your eyes off your little self at the same time? And out of such apparent contradictions, occultism is made. You're not devotedly following the ambitious promptings of your little self. At the same time, like any good pet owner, you are making sure that the antics of the little self are not allowed to interfere. Okay, this looks pretty general. The glamour of desire, with its reflex to action upon the physical body. Most people, may I say, have a very quick connection between their desires and what the physical body will do. More people that way, I would say, than having such a link between the mental body and the physical body. So what about this? And DK says, this leads to a constant condition of fighting and of turmoil. Why? Because there are so many conflicting desires, and as we try to enact them, our physical life turns tumultuous. If we try to enact contradictory desires, and if every desire is equal because it's simply our own desire, then we can expect a turbulent life. DK goes on, it negates all peace and fruitful work. And remember that there are two kinds of peace. The kind of peace that Master DK inveighs against is peace at any price, a refusal to engage in necessary conflict and decision because we want everything to be peaceful, you know. Well, whatever kind of peace he's talking about here, it negates all peace and fruitful work, let us say, because with fruitful work, you choose the kinds of desires that you will go with, that you will enact, that you will follow. It's not every prompting, just because they are your promptings that you follow out. So Master DK is saying, it negates all peace and fruitful work and must someday be brought to an end. Well, let's just say the sixth ray and the fourth ray are pretty involved in this kind of glamour, especially in the beginning phases before the sixth ray shows its more harmonious side. It is the ray of war, and so many wars are fought because of the desire nature and not because of clear thinking, obviously. A constant condition of fighting and turmoil, and it makes the individual very difficult. And so we learn about the fourth ray types at a certain stage of evolution, that they are, quote unquote, just delightful and difficult, close quote, individuals. So Master Moria probably would say, you had better co-measure your desires and make sure that they are goal fit, which is another way of making sure that they are in line with the divine plan. Now, a true disciple will know when he or she is deviating from the direction of certain energies which will manifest to some extent the divine plan on the physical plane, and will know what desires to choose and which to reject. Now, if you go to page about 473, 474 of A Treatise on White Magic, we will see a list of 15 councils. Oh, wrong book. There we go. It starts here on 473, and you will see some things related to desire. Control the body of emotion, for the waves that rise upon the stormy seas of life engulf the swimmer. shut out the sun and render all plans futile. And here's one. The word is sentinel. If I can find that. Hey, here it is. Number 11. Watch close the gates of thought. Well, that's, isn't it a little different than having your mind always on your little self, wondering about its fate? This is training the instrument, okay? It's different. Watch close the gates of thought. Sentinel desire. There you are on the walls of the city, looking keenly for the enemy who might be attacking the citadel. And if you are not an alert sentry and do not sentinel desire, the whole edifice is in danger. Sentinel desire. Cast out all fear, all hate, all greed. Well, those are pretty strong sins, we might say. They are strong misbehaviors. They stop real progress. And he tells us to look out, not just always in an inward, introspective, self-absorbed manner, and up, where the desires that have to be sentinels are not found, but other and higher aspirations are found. Let's just go to that, to page 473 and 474. It goes up to 475. So just a couple of pages there, which tell us about how we are to behave, what we are to do as we attempt to clean the house, we might say. This is all about house cleaning. So we sentinel desire. We don't let every little desire run the show. We choose which desires, in Moria's words, are goal fit. And we therefore simplify our astral life. Now the last one he gives, and maybe doesn't say too much about, is the glamour of personal ambition. Maybe he's leaving that to us, right? But if we want to advance the welfare of the little self, and we're not thinking about the welfare of the larger group or the nation or the humanity as a whole, then we'll just be consumed by this personal ambition. I was once in a musical by Kurt Weill, Drei Groschen Oper, Three Penny Opera. And like a good Aries, I was playing Mac the Knife. And Mackie Messer. It was from that period, you know, before the Nazis took over. And there was a song about ambition and the ambitious person. And it said of him, and running, or he could have said climbing, running, he steps on your face. Well, when we're social climbing and trying to reach the top, personally considered, we don't care what happens to the other people that we will be harming. We do them damage because we want to advance our little self. Obviously, that's not going to lead to any kind of true group work and group service. It's not going to qualify. I mean, if we step on the face of our co-competitor, it's not going to do anything for the higher values, is it? It's going to interfere with them. But here's the thing. We think we are so important that somehow we're entitled to do that just because we want to. And our desires and our selfish thoughts, without question, are accepted as the most important. Well, have you gotten a little bit of what DK considers some general glamours? The glamour of destiny, the glamour of aspiration, the glamour of self-assurance, the glamour of duty, the glamour of environing conditions. Is the disciple DLR? Are those his initials? The glamour of the mind, the glamour of devotion, the glamour of desire, and the glamour of personal ambition. That ought to be enough to capture quite a few of us, I would say, in our more glamorous moments. Glamour to me is an exaggeration or minimization, exaggeration of a non-essential, the minimization of an essential. It's a distortion. It's a lack of proportion by which we live, and therefore never reach, while those glamours are active, the higher points of tension, which are required of the true advancing chela. DK says here, there are many other glamours, both individual and worldwide, but these will serve to indicate the general tendency. Those who are in preparation for initiation, DK says, must learn to work consciously with glamour, rather than, may I say, to be worked over by it. He goes on, they must work effectively with the presented truth. And may I say, sometimes when one is reminded of one's glamours, one is not full of appreciation for even when a master suggests that a glamour has been lurking. Sometimes there's even kind of a shock and resentment because, well, that's just the way I am. I mean, I didn't consider this a glamour. I considered this a virtue. But then it's amidst our virtues that the dangers take place. So those preparing for initiation says, TK says, they must work effectively with the presented truth, ignoring any pain or suffering. Indifference, right? Or mental questioning, which is incident to personality rebellion and limitation. I think we can say that the personality is not accepting the corrective gladly and rebels against that which reveals the glamour, even if it is one's own angel of the presence and not the master. DK goes on to say they must cultivate that divine indifference and what do we want there? The technique of indifference related to Maya or just a general indifference? So repeating, they must cultivate that divine indifference to personal considerations, which is the outstanding hallmark of the trained initiate. Well, I guess there are new initiates and those who have been around for a while and are trained accordingly. So we've, you know, not done a lot of pages. We're on page 28, and basically this took us this far, and we'll, I have a broadcast coming up, or at least Tuya does, so got to get ready. So this is program 14, which apparently I have succeeded in doing. It's July 25th, and we're going from 26 to 28, and we'll go on to, when possible, program 15, but we don't know when. I'd like it to be soon. And it will be from 28 to whatever. And actually, I put this in the wrong place. So let me put it in the right place. And it's right here. Okay, friends. That should be roughly an hour program, and lots to think about in improving our own tendencies so that we can be more fit in our service as either members of the new group of world servers or aspiring members thereof. So we all wish you lots of love and many blessings and deep studies and profound meditation and service, which is really useful. Bye for right now.